touchdown machine for the Houston Cougars.
Sasser again, just kind of taking over right now.
That's NBA stuff right there. He is a baller.
Stick it in your pipe and smoke it, baby.
Yes! Welcome to the Scott Mullen Podcast. We are back here on a Wednesday evening talking all things Houston Cougars. And for the first time in this new athletic season, tonight we are previewing actual Houston Cougar athletic contests that are going to occur between this episode and when we reconvene next week. It's time to talk actual sports, not to mention we're going to talk about something near and dear to the hearts of, I'm sure, any Cougar fan that's listening. We're talking Cougar football offense tonight as well, Cougar football season as it were. So a lot of really cool stuff to talk about here tonight. Dustin, my friend, my co-host, the person who has tolerated me for almost 400 episodes of this podcast, how are you doing, bud?
I'm feeling pretty good, Sam. Excited to be less than 24 hours away from actual counting for real life game wins and losses. Cougar soccer raising the season as always. So our the long summer, you know, I feel like the longer we do this podcast, the shorter the summers feel like, because it's like, oh, we finally get a little bit of break. And I was like, nope, you got to turn around, and next thing you know, you look up and the new season is coming down on you. So just a couple of weeks away from Cougar football, and the summer's already over. We already got, by this time tomorrow, we'll have Cougar soccer will have a match in the books.
I mean, I can only speak for myself here. This did feel kind of like a summer that went by pretty quickly. It really does feel like not that long ago we were talking about the end of baseball season, talking about track and field outdoor championships, and lo and behold, Dustin, we are less than 3 weeks away from football, one sleep away from actual Cougar counting sports that's going to go on this coming season's tally, as it were. But first, I wanted to, as I always do at the top here, shout out our good friends at the 1012 Network, which we are part of, talking all things Big 12 over there, current and future institutions like our University of Houston Cougars. We'd really appreciate if you followed them on Twitter at TEN12 Network and subscribe to the 1012 podcast. Just reached 1,000 downloads, or 100,000 downloads, excuse me, 1,000 downloads over a year might not be so great, but 100,000 downloads, Philip and the gang over there really doing a bang-up job. The 1012 podcast, which the two of us are occasional guests on, wherever you put podcasts in your ears, we're absolutely thrilled to be a part of their network and would appreciate your support to show them what this podcast and U of H fans in general bring to our future conference. And of course, got to mention homefieldapparel.com, our awesome network sponsors who keep cranking out incredible new school releases this summer. You, dear listener, can get 15% off your first order just by typing in the promo code HOLMAN12. That's HOLMAN12 at checkout. No matter your school of allegiance, we're giving you 15% off your first order tonight. But we'll point out, if you're a Houston Cougar fan, you will absolutely love their refreshed Cougar collection. Includes a variety of different, incredibly comfortable, unique vintage designs, including not one, but two Cougar sailor tee designs that I had personally been waiting literally years to have on a wearable that I could buy. Just nice bonus that is coming from our good friends at the good brand Homefield Apparel. And of course, beyond that refreshed Cougar apparel collection, as I alluded to a moment ago, Homefield has done some really awesome new school releases on a weekly basis this summer. Their big new Saturday subscription, I've specifically highlighted over the summer, their Washington State, Northwestern, Youngstown State, and Oregon State collections, all absolutely impeccable. If you're someone like the two of us who in certain instances has no problem occasionally popping on a non-U of H t-shirt. So whatever you're looking for, hundreds of schools, recently refreshed Cougar collection, incredibly comfortable and unique vintage collegiate apparel. Be the talk of your tailgate or section at TDCU Stadium this fall. Homefieldapparel.com, promo code HOLMAN12. Get your Cougar collection right before the season starts and support our little podcast here, The Process. So, Dustin, before we get to the football and football, let's talk a little Cougar women's basketball. They released their non-conference schedule, and I think, you know, I'll get to my overarching thoughts here in a second on it, but, you know, I kind of wanted to lead us in here if you're okay with that. It was just announced this morning.
Yeah, I noticed that as well. Seeing a quartet of power conference teams on the non-conference schedule. Florida State at home. Florida in St. Pete's as part of the St. Pete Showcase. Also be facing Portland there. And then a road trip to the Little Apple to face Kansas State. And then getting Washington State at home to close out the non-conference slate. And yeah, I know you're going to talk about it in a bit here, Sam, but I like getting those four matchups, all four teams that were, you know, at least kind of of borderline tournament caliber last year, as well as a couple of pretty good mid-majors in Portland and Middle Tennessee State on the schedule. So overall, looks like a fairly challenging but not overwhelming slate for Ron Huey's team.
Yeah, I also mentioned UT Arlington, who's been a pretty regular opponent in Cougar non-conferences since Ronald Huey has been here, and always at least a pretty good Sun Belt program, and last year was an NCAA tournament team. Yeah, on the whole, the schedule has eight teams that went to the NCAA or WNIT postseason last year. You have some that you already mentioned, five NCAA tournament teams, Florida, Florida State, K-State, UT Arlington, and Wazoo, and the three WNIT teams, Portland, who you mentioned from the St. Pete event, and New Mexico and Middle Tennessee as well. They also get a couple of new in-state opponents we haven't seen in a while, the Rice Owls, who the Cougars will be playing at Tudor Fieldhouse against, and UTSA, who will be coming to the Fertitta Center. Actually, UTSA recently taken over in her second year now, former longtime Longhorn head coach Karen Aston, kind of giving that program a new fresh coat of paint. So, yeah, on the whole, a really good schedule. I would say, I'm not saying the team is going to come out of this with one loss necessarily, but other than maybe that roadie to Kansas State, I don't know if there's any matchup where I look at it and think, okay, I'm already kind of mentally penciling in a loss in this one. Like, let's be honest, when we've seen Baylor on the schedule in previous years, when UConn was a conference mate of the school in recent years, we kind of looked at that game and it was just like, okay, this is going to be a valuable experience for the team, but it's going to be very, very, very difficult to see, you know, to really envision a scenario where the team wins this game. And again, don't expect this team to get through the schedule that Dustin and I have just talked about unscathed, but it's the kind of non-conference schedule that if you make it through with only a handful of blemishes, we'll just say three or four losses, it sets you up pretty decent if you could take care of business in conference play. It's not an absolute murderer's row where you're worried that your team's going to lose confidence and, you know, just taking a lot of losses to a lot of really good teams, but it's also not the schedule where, you know, you look at it and you think, eh, I only see one or two losses on it, but you also don't see very many strong wins. That's not the case. I think if you're able to beat a number of the teams we've talked about, I think it's setting yourself up in pretty decent shape, you know, for an at-large. Obviously, very, very early to talk about the scenario, but I think that was kind of my general takeaway, that it's not the kind of schedule that's just going to absolutely tank this team's confidence and make the win-loss record look really ugly before conference play, but it's all, you know, it's also not, you know, a complete walkover. And I think it's that right on the line. It's not too hot, not too cold, the porridge, or I guess in this case, the non-conference schedule, Dustin, it seems like it's just right.
Yeah, that's kind of my first blush reaction to, as well, is that, you know, there isn't that unwinnable game on the schedule. There are plenty of challenging games on the schedule, but no, just, you know, unwinnable ones. And it is the kind of non-conference schedule that you don't think, oh man, we have to have, you know, one or two losses going into non-conference play, or where, you know, kind of your goals for the season are, you know, a little bit out the door. So I like that it's a non-conference schedule that gives you the chance to pick up quality wins, and gives you those opportunities to have some games where you have the chance to pick up a quality win, but it's not a game where, you know, the loss is going to tank your resume. So there are some kind of gimme games on there that the Cougs are going to know that they're going to need to have. So they're going to have to take care of business in those games. And then you're going to have to at least, you know, win one or two of those games against the tougher teams. So it's not, you know, no one's going to show up and just lay down for you. But I think we're in agreement that Coach Huey and staff did a good job of finding the right blend of, you know, potential for marquee wins without completely overrunning the team too much. And speaking of teams getting into their seasons, we got Cougar soccer coming up as we are recording this on Wednesday evening now, Wednesday night, I should say, less than 24 hours away from kickoff from the first match of the Jaime Frias era. And the Cougars are coming off a 13-5-2 season. For those of you who may be fans of European football, the NCAA uses American soccer record conventions. So 13-5-2 means 5 losses and 2 draws. But regardless, that record was good for the best season in program history. And while the Cougars played nearly flawlessly against the top competitors in their conference, they did lose games that they shouldn't have to teams like ECU and Temple. And those losses, plus the NCAA selection committee refusing to do even cursory research on any of the teams beyond just looking at RPI, where the Cougs finished 56th, meant that even the best season in program history didn't net the Cougs their first ever NCAA postseason appearance. And then in the offseason, head coach Diego Bocanegra retired from college coaching, and in comes Jaime Frias, who is extremely highly qualified, having served for a number of years as an assistant with Virginia, an elite program in women's college soccer. Also previously served as the head coach of the U.S. women's under-18 national team, as well as an assistant with the under-20 team. Also had brief stints back in the day as head coach at Stephen F. Austin and Nevada, was successful at both stops. So, you know, Sam, kind of just to open it up, I know we've said this before, but kind of circling back to it as we get into soccer season is, you know, it's just you can never grade any higher until you actually see him get out there and put a team out there and see how they do. But someone with his qualifications who has ties to the city of Houston certainly feels like you're setting yourself up for success as well as you can.
Yeah, I don't think I'm saying anything that I haven't said here or said something very close to. But if you were to, you know, after Diego Bocanegra announced his retirement from coaching, really go through the checklist of, you know, things you generally wanted Bocanegra's replacement to have on their resume, you know, just, you know, list it off. Experience as an assistant at one of the sport's recent powers, check. Frias had two different stints, during both of which Virginia won the College Cup. It's one of the most consistent collegiate women's soccer programs out there. Check there. Experience working with the U.S. women's national team, you know, check and check. You mentioned it, extensive experience in between his Virginia assistants times. And for good measure, someone who, granted, it's, you know, been a little bit since it happened, but someone who also has head coaching experience, that his time as a head coach isn't solely with the junior national teams, that he coached at the Division I level, like you mentioned, at Stephen F. Austin, University of Nevada at Reno. And I would note that those were, I would say, relative to those programs' expectations, pretty successful 10 years. He took SFA to the NCAA tournament 2 of the 3 years he was there, and I believe still has the record for most conference wins at the Nevada Reno soccer program. So he really has it all. And like you said, you can't judge how he's going to do here just based on resume. You know, you could go across, you know, any college sport and you will find the, you know, most well-credentialed coaches who just for whatever reason didn't work out, because I think the great thing about sports is that you can't exactly predict how humans are going to interact. That we're dealing with something as inherently unpredictable as sports. But really, just excited about, you know, what he brings to the table. If for good measure, also has local ties. Played his prep soccer in the Houston area, I believe at Stratford High, before he played collegiately at Centenary. He's really got it all. I was impressed with the resume of his assistants too, especially. I can't remember her name, the associate head coach, I believe, as she came from Coppell up in the DFW area, Coppell, excuse me. I'm sure the multiple DFW listeners we have are just like slamming their radios at my horrible pronunciation. But she was a prep coach in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, also an assistant at North Texas, collegiate head coach, just a very, very, very well-credentialed staff. And I think we've said it before here, but I think it bears repeating that if Diego Bocanegra doesn't have the run he has before this staff's arrival, I don't think you're attracting a candidate of Jaime Frias's level if you don't show, you know, the recent success that the last staff was able to have here, and show that Houston Cougar soccer isn't this lost cause, that if you're a promising coach like Frias is by, you know, any metric, that you can come here and really take this thing to the next step and continue building a consistent winner at Houston Cougar soccer.
So Fleur Benatar, the assistant
coach. Fleur Benatar.
You have their assistant, Brett O'Connor, someone that has some experience with the Rapids in professional soccer. So, well-credentialed staff,
the volunteer assistant also was, like, worked for Iran's national team, too. Like, very credentialed staff. Sorry.
Yeah. The staff that, you know, you wouldn't expect to see this kind of staff at a program that has never made the NCAA tournament before, but I think that speaks well, like you said, of the direction that Houston is heading in, as well as the fact that you've got a program in a city like Houston, heading to the Big 12 next year. So I think all those things certainly put Houston in a pretty good spot, given some of the shortcomings until very recently that this program has had. And you know, one of the things that I think is really exciting with this coaching staff coming in is that, with one notable exception that we'll talk about, they've done a very good job of retaining the players with college eligibility that were already on the roster last year from the most successful team in program history. So looking at the team start, we'll start from the back with the goalie where Mika Gracia is back. Started three games as a freshman in the spring, 2020-2021 season. Started all but one of Houston's games last year. 9 shutouts in 19 games. A really strong sophomore season. A couple of backups with no college experience. But Sam, really excited to have Mika Gracia back for her for this season. And then presumably with a couple of years of eligibility left, she'll be also Houston's first Big 12 goalkeeper heading into next year. So feel good about her between the pipes.
It bears repeating what an awesome first season she has as a starter last fall. Had 9 clean sheets, 3 of which came in big conference wins over Memphis, SMU, UCF. I will point out, again, it's just an exhibition. Maybe the fact that the coaching staff put in Haley Woodard for the LSU scrimmage means maybe they'll try to get her some game time as well. Though, would agree with what you said, that Mika Gracia isn't just your returning starting goalkeeper. She's your returning starting goalkeeper. And, one of the best players, one of the best all-conference candidates on this roster.
And then you look at the defense in front of her. The Cougs had a 3-woman back line last year, and Coach Frias's lineup for the exhibition against LSU also had 3 starting defenders. So, again, you never know what to make from an exhibition, but it doesn't appear that major tactical changes are coming there. The only starting defender from last year who doesn't return is Cassidy Formanek, who transferred to Iowa, where she reconnects with former U of H assistant and former podcast guest Blair Quinn. I can talk. I can words.
I'm gonna have to DM Coach Quinn and tell him that you called him the GOAT. But
My goodness, we miss him so much that he's just I cease being able to make words when I think about him no longer being at U of H. No, but you lose Formanek, but your other 2 starting defenders back. Emma Clark, a 5th-year senior with 3.5 years starting experience under her belt with the program, huge asset on the back line. Taylor Garza Freeman back as a 6th-year senior in her 2nd year with the Cougs as a graduate transfer. Those 2 give you, I think, 2 all-conference. Caliber defenders. Clark was already second team all AAC last year and was named preseason all AAC heading into 2022. Senior Addie Tate, who has paid her dues as a reserve the last 3 seasons, got the start in the exhibition match against LSU alongside Clark and Garza Freeman. We did see Ava Alanis and Janae Sanders get minutes in defense off the bench last year. Freshman Lace Coker got some minutes against LSU. So, Sam, definitely some big shoes to fill with Formanek gone, but it still feels like having 2 of the big 3 back on that back line really helps you, with a couple of proven seniors there.
Yeah, that was really exciting during this team's spring practices to see that Emma Clark and Taylor Garza Freeman were participating, because I think both of us thought that, the 2 of them, who you mentioned, and very much agree, are 2 of your biggest all-conference candidates right there, and 2 athletes who have played just a ton of collegiate soccer. You mentioned Taylor Garza Freeman going into her 6th COVID super senior season. Emma Clark, who has been playing a bunch of this program since her freshman year. That's just so much collective experience. I think that's part of what made last year's team such a really sound defensive unit, is that you had, Formanek and Clark, and Garza Freeman, who had just played a ton of soccer. And obviously losing Formanek, would prefer to have her than not. Losing Kayla Izagari as well, who kind of played fullback last year, someone I had maybe forgotten about, but played a pretty decent sized role on last year's team. But yeah, I would expect to see a lot of Clark and Garza Freeman, obviously, like you said, Addie Tate to play a much bigger role after a few years of reserve, and Ava Alanis and Lace Coker to see a fair amount of action, though less than the 3 defenders that we just mentioned as well.
Yeah, then in midfield, the big loss is Mia Brasha graduating. She was really the heartbeat of this team in the middle of the pitch. But the good news is that the Bocanegra staff liberally rotated a large number of midfielders last year, and most of them outside of Brasha are back. Madison Gear, 2 goals and 2 assists, was an important part of last year's group. Caitlin Matthews started 19 of the team's 20 games. She had a goal and 3 assists. Sam Weehe made 13 starts as a freshman. I think she has a really bright future there. We saw freshman Alex Whitcraft get the start against LSU, so really looks like a pretty strong group of center mids coming back, Sam, even without Mia Brasha.
Yeah, and you're losing a program, I would say, program talisman, I guess in this case. Mia Brasha was the spine of this team, was really, really good, and like we just got done talking about the defenders, just played a ton of soccer over her career, just really gave you that experience in the middle of the pitch. And we'll point out that, the ones you just mentioned, Gear, Weehe, Hudson, and Cross, did you mention CC Cross as well, all had 2 goals this year. I guess CC Cross is kind of a attacking player and midfielder. Also, Caitlin Matthews was second on last year's team with 3 assists. And we'll point out, I just noticed from the scrimmage that Cross was one of two players along with Emma Clark to play every minute against LSU. Just a lot of proven experienced players. And yeah, I think if you want to zoom out a bit further, nearly everyone that we've talked about with this group, with these Cougar midfielders, everyone but Gear is listed as a junior or, you know, less in terms of their collegiate eligibility. And we'll point out that Gear's listed as a senior in the U of H roster, but that's including the 2020-2021 season, which doesn't really count against eligibility. So there might be a scenario where you have Gear and everyone we just talked about back for the coming season. A really deep group. Obviously, you're not going to replace Brasha's specific contributions, but just with the volume of players you talked about, not to mention a newcomer like Alex Whitcraft, who the staff seems to like a fair amount. I think a lot of reasons to be excited about this group, not just standout players, but standout players and depth, which is kind of the sweet spot.
Yeah, you got those attacking midfielders. You mentioned CeCe Cross, Adriana Hudson, someone else who had some offensive prowess at times off the bench last year, who got a start alongside Cross in kind of the attacking midfielder role against LSU in the exhibition, both entering their junior seasons, both likely to take on bigger roles this year. And you know, much like with your defenders, the midfield group has that one big loss, but you have to feel, like I said, pretty good about the overall strength in numbers returning. And then I think the one position where you definitely take the biggest hit has to be at forward, where you lose a couple of, you know, just really, really talented players in Jasmine Grant and Ziona Brown. And certainly if Houston has anything to prove, they need to prove that they can, frankly, score goals with the current group of strikers that they do have. Brown was involved in the most goals of any Cougar last year, scored 4 and had 7 assists. Jasmine Grant was one of the most prolific strikers in program history. She only ended up with 3 goals and 2 assists last year, but I think that was a function of her being the, you know, clear primary focus of every opponent's game plan, a fact which is, you know, reflected by the fact that she was voted first team all AAC despite having the 3rd best numbers among Cougar strikers. So, you know, we're going to talk about some of the players coming back, Sam, but I think you do have to acknowledge that, you know, losing Brown and Grant, you know, up front, that is a big, you know, big couple of big losses. And, you know, certainly you don't want to make too much of an exhibition, but the Cougs getting shut out at home and by LSU in that exhibition, you know, is maybe one little small little mini data point that says, yeah, it's going to be tough to replace those two.
No doubt. This is definitely the position group where U of H has the most to replace, which isn't to say there aren't multiple really intriguing players returning, but you just can't hand wave away the departures of Jasmine Grant, who was a regular starter since Diego Bocanegra got to this program in 2017, and also Ziona Brown, who led the team in assists last year, was 2nd in goals scored. I will say the good news is that you do have the leading goal scorer from last year's team, Nadia Kamasa, back in only her sophomore season. If you'll recall, Kamasa had an incredible 5 of her 6 goals last season, Dustin. Ended up being game winners, including that absolutely incredible deflected goal off the Memphis keeper in a goal kick near the end of regulation, which propelled the Cougs to a just really crucial 1-0 win, and had an OT sudden death goal early in the season to get the Cougs past a real pesky McNeese team on the road. Did kind of look at her season numbers for last fall. If you want to pick nits, I think it's worth noting that her only goal in conference play was that aforementioned Memphis goal, and that she also didn't see more than 43 minutes of game action any conference against any conference opponent last season. But we'll say she was also a redshirt freshman playing her first college season, was playing behind a pair of super seniors in Grant and Brown, who, you know, are pretty on the record, were really awesome. You just mentioned, you know, Grant being a first team all conference selection, Brown being your team points leader. And I'm also really curious, you know, another sophomore who, you know, showed some promise last season, her first collegiate season, should see a sizable increase in her role is Anna Reza, who had 2 goals and an assist in only 291 minutes played total last season, played a fair amount against LSU in the scrimmage. So expect we'll see a fair amount of Kamasa and Reza up front for the Cougars this year.
I was going to say, Reza definitely looks like she's in line for a bigger role up front. You know, senior Janice Singleton had 2 goals in 32 minutes last year. You have to like that efficiency. But you also I think, have to ask why she didn't play a little bit more. I think she did see a role in the LSU exhibition. Maddie Bauer is another reserve the last couple of years, might be ready for a bigger role. So, but yeah, I think definitely that's the role. That's the position group where, you know, Coach Frias has to prove his mettle in year one. Can he get this group scoring goals? I'd be surprised if Houston isn't at least pretty good defensively with the defensive players they have coming back, with the midfielders they have coming back. But putting the ball in the net looks like maybe the bigger challenge this year.
And that was last year's team. If last year's team had a weakness, there were times last year where they really struggled to score. You mentioned at the top the losses to ECU and Temple, which had, I think, the most negative effect on this team having a postseason resume, were games where the Cougars really struggled to score for extended stretches.
Yeah, absolutely. So looking at the 2022 season, the Cougs have 17 games on the schedule, 9 non-conference games, 8 AAC contests. Wichita State and Tulane are your non-soccer playing schools in the conference. And while the schedule is certainly ambitious in that 6 of your 9 non-conference games are on the road, the Cougs are also facing a trio of Big 12 teams in Oklahoma, Baylor, and Texas Tech. But the only teams on Houston's schedule that were at-large NCAA-caliber teams last year are the three from your conference, South Florida, SMU, and Memphis. Houston's first four matches in non-conference are all against teams that finished in the triple digits in RPI last year. The best team on your non-conference slate by RPI is Rice, who finished 67th. The average 2021 RPI, Sam, of the teams on Houston's schedule, 117th. So, we saw last year, even with an impressive 13-5-2 record, even with a second place finish in a three-bid conference, that wasn't enough to get Houston to the NCAA postseason because the RPI wasn't good enough. And this is a pretty similar schedule to what we saw last year, minus last year's matchup with a top 10 TCU team, meaning that, winning two-thirds of your total game, Sam, might not be enough to get you over the hump to the NCAA postseason.
Yeah, but I do think this schedule does have some interesting challenges on it. I think in some ways it's not too dissimilar to the women's basketball non-conference schedule that we talked about a bit earlier, in that I think there are challenges there, but I also don't think it's the kind of schedule that, with a new staff and players still learning what this new head coach and new staff want to do, that if you don't come out of the gates blazing hot tomorrow against Oklahoma, that It's not going to be a schedule where it's full of empty calorie kind of wins, but it's also not going to be the schedule that just absolutely kills the team's confidence. And, that kind of thing can be maybe a bit more fragile when, it's not a returning coach who's been here several years and spent, a long time recruiting all these athletes coming to the University of Houston. It's a staff full of coaches who have less than a year's experience total working with all these athletes and recruited probably none or very few members of this roster. So is it the kind of schedule that can, parachute you into an at-large berth in the tournament? No, I think you laid out pretty well as to why it's not, but it's also a schedule that, I think if you get through with a number of wins and all that, I think that you could feel pretty good about it. You could feel pretty good about what the staff's doing. It may not get you, a guaranteed trip to the postseason, but if this team can, and I think I mentioned this trio of games, it's the first week of September. It's a 3-game in 8-day stretch where you open at home for the first time this season against Baylor. Then you have Rice the following Sunday, always a competitive opponent. They've been the better Houston soccer program for basically just about every year that Houston and Rice have had Division I intercollegiate soccer, and then a trip to Texas Tech, who wasn't a postseason team last year, but was really, really good. I want to say they won 9 of their 11 contests at home in Lubbock. So if you can go 2-1 over that stretch of 3 games, Dustin, I mean, obviously if it's preceded by a loss to Sam Houston, that has some effects in the RPI, but if you could take 2 of 3 from that non-conference stretch, I'm feeling pretty good about this team.
Yeah, we'll have to see. I am bullish on the program. I'm bullish on the 2022 version of this team. I worry about how the schedule plays out. Like I said, I like the backbone of the defense in the midfield, but if this team struggles to score goals, we've already seen how that can be a recipe for ending up with bad results, even in games where you can, mostly dominate the run of play. Basically, I think this is a Cougar team that could beat a top 25 or 30 team 1-0, but I think this is a Cougar team that might drop a 1-0 loss to a team outside the top 100, and it feels like there's a lot more chances to do the latter than the former on the schedule. So, I don't know. I think the standard that you need to hit is probably winning at least 7 of your 9 non-conference games, beating all the bottom half AAC teams this year, and then winning at least 1 or 2 games against the Memphis, SMU, Florida schools group. It feels like that's what it's going to take at this point to kick down the door to the NCAA tournament, and that does feel like a tall order. But, I said it before, I'll say it again. I like this roster, I like this coach, and I'm excited to see how the season turns out.
Yep, wouldn't disagree with any of that.
And the season begins, as we mentioned, this weekend, opening with road trips to Oklahoma on Thursday and then Lamar on Sunday. Should mention the Cougs opened last season by beating OU 3-1 at home. This one will be in Norman. Sooners went just 8-11-1 last year, finishing outside the top 100 in the RPI, so it didn't end up being as big of an accomplishment as beating Oklahoma maybe sounds like. You know, but the Sooners were picked sixth in the Big 12 to open the season, so a road win over a middle-of-the-pack Big 12 team would certainly be a nice way to start the season if the Cougs can pull it off. And you can always hope, of course, that the Sooners end up having a bit better season than they did a year ago, Sam.
And you mentioned it. They finished last season with a losing record. Though I will point out they won six of their nine games that were played in Norman, were 6-2-1. On the season, they do lose two of their top three goal scorers, including their leading scorer from last season's team, Jasmine Richards, though they do return the team's points leader, Bree Amos. They also lost four of their top six minutes played leaders from last season. And another thing that stood out to me is that I just took a quick glance at their roster. Sometimes something as superficial as just looking at a team's roster can, you know, really, you know, bring some insights about the opponent. And Dustin, there were only six Sooners on their most recent roster that were listed as juniors or seniors. So pretty young team, and this game will be both teams' season opener. OU beat Texas State 9-0 in an exhibition, but as eye-opening as that score is, just an exhibition, not really reading too much into that one.
And then the Cougs will be in Beaumont taking on Lamar on Sunday evening. Cougs earned a 3-0 win over the Cardinals in Houston last year. Lamar looks like definitely one of the weaker teams on Houston's schedule, so even on the road, Sam, this one needs to be a W.
Yeah, one you definitely have to pick up. They did finish last season above 500 overall, won six of their 10 conference matchups. Sunday will actually be Lamar's season opener, but I don't want to say any game is a have to win when it's your second one of the season, but I pretty much agree with you. This is a have to win kind of game.
Did want to mention one last thought while we're talking about Cougar soccer, which is the rule change for the year. No overtime during the regular season. So I think if I had realized that, Sam, when we were doing bold predictions a couple of weeks ago, I don't know if I would have taken the beating last year's win total, because I think we're going to see more draws across the board this year with no overtime. But that's something to keep an eye on.
I was trying to remember just off the top of my head. I was going to say this team only played two overtime games last. No. Three. They had the draw at USF. That shouldn't have been a draw, but we'll leave that. McNeese and SFA. That's right. SFA, we played to a draw even after the full overtime. Yeah. No, I agree with you. I think that's going to be an interesting wrinkle this year.
All right. Well, going from football to football, we got some Cougar offense to talk after doing the defense and special teams preview in the last episode. Make sure to give that one a listen if you haven't already. But yeah, last week, Sam, we talked about a Cougar defense that is looking to kind of maintain the top 20 level that it already played at a season ago. This week, we talk about a Cougar offense that, if you're feeling optimistic, you might say that they're a year behind the defense, right? This Cougar defense went from bad in 2019 to good in 2020 to great in 2021. The offense was still pretty rough in 2020, became a good offense, I think, in 2021. And with Clayton Toon leading such a talented, experienced group into 2022, I think the potential is there to have a really exciting offense, which by extension would mean a really exciting season overall for Cougar football. There are certainly some questions to be answered. You know, can the offensive line at least maintain its level of play from a year ago after losing some guys? Can Houston become more of a vertical passing threat? Are some of those young receivers ready for larger roles? How does the run game look without Alton McCaskill? But Sam, it feels like the floor and ceiling of this offense have been significantly raised to the point where, you know, I'd be stunned if this isn't at least a pretty good offense. And I feel like the potential is there for this to even be a, top 20 or 30 offense.
Would agree with that. This was definitely, if you're ranking offense versus defense, the second best unit out of those two on this team in 2021. But I think we went into last year really wanting to see an identity. We didn't need to see a top 10 offense necessarily. We just wanted to see proof that the arrow was pointed off, proof that this head coach and this staff had something that they wanted to do offensively that had a chance of working here. We wanted to see some signs of what a successful Dana Holgorsen offense this go around looks like here. And I think by the end of last season, we certainly saw that, even if you could still tell last season, even as things were working better than they had the prior couple, that it wasn't exactly to the level Holgorsen wanted it to be yet. And I think my optimism that I think I share with you about this unit taking that step from good to great comes from the fact that a couple of the problem position groups that we're going to talk about in depth from the years past don't just appear to have taken a step forward, but I would argue in case of the receiver group, just for example, that it looks like that group has gone from problem position group that always seems to be drawing the ire of this head coach publicly to one of the team's deepest and strongest position groups. And I think maybe most importantly, last season we finally got most of a full season of Clayton Toon playing the quarterback position and playing it well, which isn't to say that before 2021 Toon hadn't shown signs of promise, or not to say that, you know, on the other side of the coin that Toon was perfect last season. But even factor in that undeniably horrible week one performance against Texas Tech, if you don't remember this, Austin, Toon was still one of PFF's best 15 rated Division I quarterbacks last season, even with just one of the ugliest data points a quarterback could have last season. I say this a lot, I don't think PFF is the gospel, but I also don't think they're pulling out of thin air that Clayton Toon was a really good, one of the best in the country level of quarterbacks by the end of last season. You bring back for him to throw to one of the country's most dynamic receivers in Tank Dell, a receiver group that I just mentioned is stocked with young talent. Won't have one notable player, which I'm sure we'll get to for, you know, reasons that, you know, are frustrating, but, you know, kind of common in college football. Unfortunate, no spin there. But it just seems like every indicator is pointing up for this Cougar offense that we're going to see this group take that jump from, you know, good, no longer a liability for this team to very, very good. And we will see a fully realized Dana Holgorsen offense here. And I'm pretty excited for it.
Yeah, and certainly for that offense to be what we want it to be, you got to see some continued production from the offensive line, who took a big step forward. You know, I would argue the biggest step forward in on U of H's offensive production last year was maybe not even Clayton Toon, it was the offensive line, which for the first 2 years under Dana Holgorsen, pretty rough, and certainly improved health was a big factor in the improved play of the O-line last year. I wouldn't say this was a great line last year. I wouldn't even say it was the strength of the team, but it held its own, something that it wasn't able to do the previous couple of years, again, largely due to just an insane number of injuries. And you're heading into this year, Houston does have to cope with some losses on the line, the biggest one for me being center Cody Russey, who became a real linchpin in that line as a grad transfer last year. The Cougs also graduate Dennis Bardwell, who was a two-year starter at right tackle, and Keenan Murphy also used up his eligibility, becomes a graduate assistant. He was a starting left guard all last year, although Cameron Johnson got the majority of the snaps at the left guard position. And, you know, heading into this year, what's exciting and scary at the same time is that the Cougars don't have a single senior offensive lineman on the roster, and it's majority underclassmen, 8 freshmen, 6 sophomores, 3 juniors. And yeah, you've got some fourth-year sophomores in that group, but it's one of Houston's youngest position groups at a position where you don't usually want to be very young. But the flip side to that is that you could run out of starting 5, that if you count Cameron Johnson as the de facto starter last year, you've basically got 5 guys with 12-plus career starts, so basically at least a full season's worth of starts under their belt. So even though it's a young group, it's not an inexperienced group, kind of your quintessential, you know, guys getting more on-the-job training than you expected, but it pays off down the road scenario.
Yeah, I think the guy I'm most excited about is your returning starting left tackle, Patrick Paul, who, when he's been healthy, which hasn't been always, he missed the majority of the 2020 season, but when he's been healthy, has not just looked like a good, effective college left tackle, but if you want to, you know, go back further, he was, or dig in further, he was a top 35 graded pass blocking tackle last season. He's a guy, when he runs out in the field, looks like a Sunday player. And I think last season we saw for the first time, you know, one, how this staff was willing to, you know, put him out there at the very end of the 2019 season when Josh Jones got hurt, you know, how they were willing to expose, you know, a true freshman to Division I action, because the guy doesn't just have potential at this point. He's already looking like a good all-conference caliber offensive tackle. And I'm not saying this is the most likely scenario, but we're talking about a guy with his frame and what he's already shown he's able to do at the collegiate level. He's a guy, if he has a good enough season, I'm not saying, again, this is the most likely scenario, but it's not a crazy thought to us that Patrick Paul really has a breakout season, a season not dissimilar to what Josh Jones did at his last season in the program, Holgorsen's first year, that we're talking about a guy who could start his pro career after the season. Again, not saying it's the most likely scenario, but he's a guy that's shown not just that level of potential, not just that frame, but the ability to actually do the darn thing at the college level.
I was going to say, I actually have in my notes that even after I just said that there were no seniors on the offensive line, if anybody isn't returning to this offensive line in 2023, it might be because Patrick Paul is playing on Sundays. I do think that that is within the realm of possibilities.
Great lines. And then, you know,
Yeah. I think kind of four of the five line positions, you can kind of figure out who the likely starter is. Pollitt, left tackle, left guard, Cameron Johnson, as mentioned, the de facto starter there last year. He was a guy with a bunch of power conference offers out of high school. He's a fourth year sophomore this year. Someone I feel pretty good about. I know Dana Holgerson was raving about Jack Freeman's play at center during the spring. He's a fifth year junior. You have to figure he's the likely starter in the middle. Kind of interesting. Freeman started seven games at center in 2019, five more in 2020. And I think he was maybe the of all guys your quintessential like taking reps when he really shouldn't have been taking first team reps yet due to injuries kind of forcing him to play prematurely. But the best thing that happened for Jack Freeman last year was Cody Rusty transferred in, and Jack Freeman started zero games. He started zero games, but he appeared in all 13. More importantly, learned from Rusty all year long. You heard Holgo saying how in turn Freeman is already passing that knowledge and leadership on to Demetrius Hunter, one of the jewels of Houston's 2022 recruiting class. So despite losing Rusty, I'm excited to see what the new look Jack Freeman looks like, and I love Houston's future at that position with Hunter coming in. And then right guard Tank Jenkins is your returning star, who, elite high school recruit, spent 3 years on the bench at A&M, stepped right in and looked pretty ready for college ball from day one last year for the Cougs, started every game. So you love having him back for potentially two more years. And that interior line, Sam, those three guys, I think you can probably pencil in the starters there, but three guys that all have starting experience you feel reasonably good at. And like I said, nobody that is in their last year of eligibility.
Yeah, I wanted to mention also, you said it, while Johnson technically isn't your returning starter in the most literal sense at left guard, Keaton Murphy, Gala starts, exhausts his eligibility, is now on staff. He played 669 offensive snaps in 13 games last season. And despite last season being the first time that Johnson saw extended game time, he graded out as U of H's best guard by a pretty wide margin over Jenkins and Murphy, which, again, no small feat when 2021 was the first time he was seeing consistent collegiate action. And I think one of the biggest reasons I'm optimistic about this offense and this O-line in general is how confident Holgerson was after spring ball, how confident he was that Jack Freeman was ready to, be a capable replacement for Cody Rusty. It kind of makes sense. You said it. He started 12 games in between 2019 and 2020 when he probably wasn't ready, and got that one-year boost of working with a really good, really veteran collegiate center in Cody Rusty. It would make sense that a guy who's about to be a fifth-year junior and just learned from a multi-year starter for a full season could take that kind of step forward this year, and I'm excited to see it. Obviously, big question at right tackle. You have Tyler Johnson, a one-time blue-chip recruit from Conroe, didn't play a ton in his 3 years at the Cal College. Lance Robinson, who started 12 games at Middle Tennessee, joined the program as a transfer in spring, and Ruben Unije, who probably has the most experience playing for this team of any of the guys who are candidates to start right tackle, started six games at left tackle in replacing Patrick Paul in the 2020 season, missed most of last year hurt. So a lot of interesting candidates there. I don't want to hand wave away the possibility that losing a, stable and capable starter in Dennis Bardwell, you might have some, learning to do at that position, but I think with the four other positions being as solid as they are, I think we're within our right to be pretty confident about this group. Certainly the most confident we've been in this group since Holgerson got here.
Yeah, I'm really intrigued by Tyler Johnson, who by my account is actually the highest rated high school recruit of any of the players on Houston's 2022 roster in terms of what his 24/7 composite rating was.
Which was almost a national top 50 recruit. I think it was just outside the national top 50. Was UT's top-rated 2019 high school signee, I believe.
Yeah, but played pretty sparingly, but kind of a similar situation to Tank Jenkins coming in from A&M last year with 3 years of mostly sitting on the bench, but a pretty impressive recruiting pedigree that makes you intrigued by what he could do. And then kind of opposite end of the spectrum, really, when you go to Lance Robinson, coming in from Middle Tennessee, guy who was not a big-time recruit at all out of high school, but someone who was really impressive last year for the Blue Raiders, starting 12 games as a redshirt freshman. Then you mentioned Unije as well, someone with probably another guy who could put in the got a little more action than he should have gotten at an early point in his career, but now someone as a fifth-year junior who may be a little bit more ready for college ball and hopefully has a full season of health. So, I'm still not quite sure about what the drop-off is going to be from the starting group here on the offensive line to the backups, and it's a position where you expect you're going to have to know at least some of your backups at some point before the season is over. But, I like the starting five here, Sam, and I like the first couple of options after that, and hopefully we get a second consecutive season of not having to find out who the 11th and 12th 12th most trusted offensive linemen are.
Yeah, I think you feel you're never going to feel good about that. I do think you feel a little bit better about your depth than you may have in 2019 or 2020. But yeah, hoping we see most of the five guys that we've talked to. We see most of the same five guys starting most of the games this year. Knocking on wood here.
And then a position where we don't have to guess too much about the starter heading into the year is quarterback. Clayton Tune is back for one last ride. And man, Sam, has he come a long way from being, you know, Houston's quarterback of the future after Derek King to being the quarterback of the present a little bit earlier than was ideal to, you know, finally coming into his own last year. And now in his, entering his final year of college eligibility, he comes into the season as one of the top 5 or 10 returning quarterbacks in the country. And, you know, last year talking about Clayton Tune, I remember saying that, you know, he had proven that he had the toughness and the leadership intangibles. He had proven that he had the arm talent. He had to prove that he could be a consistently good decision maker. And over the final 13 games of last season, he did exactly that. So I think the new question coming into this season is, can he lead this Cougar passing attack to become more vertical? And much like his growth as a decision maker last year hinged on improved play from the offensive line, I think his growth as a vertical passer this year is going to be, you know, hinging on the play of this receiver group. But all in all, you know, doesn't feel like a bad position to be heading into the year with someone that, like you said, even on, you know, non-Cougar-tinted glasses of, you know, national metrics like, you know, PFF are, you know, someone that is consistently rated one of the, you know, the top 10 or so quarterbacks in the country.
And I can't overstate how much you and I want Clayton Tune to get through the season injury-free after we've seen, to varying degrees, his last three seasons affected at least somewhat by an in-season injury. In a weird way, I do think his hamstring injury last year at the end of the Rice game, I think did push his development in the right direction. I think that limited his ability to pull the ball and run, something that he could be quite good at and something I think at times he kind of used maybe as a security blanket, maybe pulled it and ran a little too often in situations where he felt like he was under serious pressure, because quite often our offensive line allowed him to be under serious pressure. But I think not having maybe as much of that mobility, probably maybe having more of a mandate from the staff to really stay in the pocket, really forced him to become a better decision maker and make things happen with his arm. And I think that confidence he had to have built up last year is so, so important. You said it. We already knew he had the toughness, knew he had the physical tools, arm talent, the ability to escape pressure, all that stuff. Already knew he had the pretty consistent support of his teammates and coaches, but sports are so mental. And I think you saw last season Tune really clear any mental blocks that he might have had. And just if you want to look at recent history, we've also seen quarterbacks under Dana Holgorsen have really strong final collegiate seasons. I think the best comp, the best recent comp certainly that we have, is Holgorsen's last West Virginia quarterback, Will Grier, who threw for a hair under 4,000 yards and accounted for 40 total touchdowns in 11 games of the 2018 season. I think Clayton Tune will have the kind of season where he's at the very least in the discussion for Conference Player of the Year. And I don't think I'm being wildly optimistic. And I also said Conference Player of the Year, not Conference Offensive Player of the Year, Conference Player of the Year. I think that's where Clayton Tune's ceiling is. And I think that's pretty exciting if you're a Cougar fan.
Yeah, then this is obviously secondary to, you know, seeing how well Houston does as a team this year. But, you know, I'm excited to watch Clayton Tune climb the passing leaderboards at U of H throughout the season. He comes into the year with 7,926 passing yards. That puts him seventh in school history, but he needs only 1,505 this year to pass Andre Ware, Jason McKinley, Greg Ward Jr., and David Klingler to reach third place. So very, very doable. Would need over 5,000 yards to catch Kevin Cobb for number two, and over 11,000 to catch some guy named Case something or other for number one. So probably don't need to worry about those guys, but getting to number three at a school that has thrown the ball around the yard as much as Houston has throughout the years would be really cool. And then at the touchdown leaderboard, he has, I think, maybe even more upward potential. 64 career touchdown passes, already good enough to put him number five in school history. Needs only 11 to catch Andre Ware, 21 to catch Kevin Cobb, 27 to catch David Klingler. So if he even matches last year's 30 touchdown passes, that would get him all the way to number two in school history. He would need, and I swear I'm not making this number up, 91 touchdown passes this year to catch that Keenum guy. So again, probably not going to happen, but again, getting to number two in school history behind the guy who holds the flipping FBS record would be pretty darn cool.
It's the stance of this podcast that we are very high on Clayton Tune, and you've heard us sing Clayton Tune's praises for the last few minutes. We do not think Clayton Tune is going to throw for 91 touchdowns and 11,000 yards this year. I'm sorry, Clayton. We're setting the expectations a bit more realistic than that. But I think that would be cool. I really think it would be awesome for him to get into that top three, because I really do think this is a guy, you know, especially if we have the kind of season that you and I think this program can have this year, who deserves to be up in the pantheon of really great quarterbacks of the Houston Cougar football program in the modern era.
Should have put that on bold predictions. I'm taking the under on 91 touchdown passes for Clayton Tune this year. Sorry,
Clayton. That's a bet $1,000 to make 50 cents kind of bet there, Dustin. Just saying.
I suppose. What if real life turns into me playing, you know, NCAA football on junior varsity mode or something, though? It could happen, I guess. No, probably not. And yeah, talking about that receiver group that he's going to be throwing to, this is, I think, one of the reasons why you and I are excited for what Clayton Tune can do this year, and why we're really intrigued to see what happens with the vertical passing game. Is, you know, if there was a criticism of the passing game last year, I think it was that, you know, the pass game became a little bit too reliant on Tank Dell and didn't go downfield enough. And certainly that there's a couple of areas that the coaching staff is hoping to address this year, and is addressed by bringing in just a number of newcomers at that position to battle with some of the returning players for the snaps and to provide some depth behind Tank Dell. And certainly, you know, I think before you talk about any of those guys, you do have to talk about Tank Dell and just how exciting it is to get, you know, you talk about Clayton Tune being one of the top ranked quarterbacks in the country. Tank Dell, even by people who, you know, objective film studiers who don't have any allegiance to one team, being called one of the best wide receivers in the country heading into next season. And really exciting as well to get Keshawn Carter back, who, the former Texas Tech transfer, you know, looked like he was really starting to get comfortable in the offense and really become more productive when he had a season-ending injury last year. So getting those two guys back to kind of be a 1-2 punch, I think, puts Houston in a pretty good place, even before you start looking at you know, some mouth-watering talent of the players coming in and joining the program.
And as awesome as Tank Dell was last season, it's awesome with a capital A. Anytime you have a situation where the top receiver has more than double the number of catches as the second leading guy, Dell had 90 catches last year. The second most was Christian Trahan with 37. Anytime you have that gulf, it's not a great recipe, you know, for success long term with his offense. And that's not to say nobody from last year's receiver group showed promise. You mentioned Keshawn Carter really did look like he was coming into his own before a foot injury ended his season prematurely. Certainly not someone we're going to be able to talk about tonight as a current Houston Cougar, but Jake Herslow is someone I think we'd all have been over the moon if U of H had been able to find an extra year of eligibility for him in the couch cushions. But in addition to having Dell and Carter back, you mentioned it, you have so many really exciting young receivers who have joined this program since the start of last season. I think we should lead off with a guy from the incoming class, the 2022 class, consensus four-star, Matthew Golden. He's been turning heads since spring ball multiple occasions. Holgorsen has said on the record that he is likely a week one starter. Regardless of whether Matthew Golden is out there on the first offensive series or his name is on the top line of the first depth chart in anticipation of that UTSA game, I think Golden is someone we should expect to be, you know, seeing on the field a lot this season, and hopefully for at least two more really productive seasons in the Big 12 immediately after this one.
Yeah, Golden, someone that is just, since he's gotten on campus, is just every word that you've heard anyone say about him is just how special he's going to be and how good he already looks as a true freshman. You know, if you had, you know, Carter, Dell, and Golden coming in, I feel like you'd have a pretty good, strong basis of a good wide receiver group. But then you add a quartet of Division I transfers coming in, all guys who will be youngsters in their, you know, entering their, you know, redshirt or the second year, whatever, for either freshman or sophomore seasons. So all guys with multiple years of eligibility, but also, you know, to be fair, all guys who, like Matthew Golden, have really yet to prove themselves at the Division I, you know, collegiate level. But, you know, just talking about someone with the unbelievable recruiting pedigree of Cody Jackson coming in as a transfer from Oklahoma, even another extremely highly touted recruit, Samuel Brown from West Virginia, comes in after a year with the Mountaineers, and then Joseph Manjack IV from USC, someone that, you know, Coach Holgorsen has been raving recently about, just his versatility and his ability to play all four wide receiver positions, and just trying to figure out, you know, what is the best way to get someone like that on the field and involved in your offense. So just, you know, you probably can't count on all four of those guys, you know, as well as Bryce Johnson coming in from Ole Miss as well. You can't count on all four of those guys to all just come in and immediately, you know, become, you know, 40 catch, 50 catch guys for you. But it just, it feels like a lot more talent in the receiver group, in the receiver room, than we had a year ago. And just the odds on at least one or two of these guys coming in and having a kind of a breakout season feels reasonably high.
Yeah. Manjack is someone we've heard a lot about in spring and fall practices. Returns home to the Houston area after playing a bit last year as a true freshman at USC. I was doing some reading, Dustin, to Manjack's last year at USC, and despite not enrolling early, he really impressed his USC coaches with how quickly he took to the speed of the collegiate game, and he's been getting similarly positive reviews this fall with the Cougars. Listed at 6'3", and provides a bit of a contrast to, you know, a very dynamic but maybe a bit smaller receiver group from a lot of the guys we talked about. And with Samuel Brown, he's another guy who's been getting rave reviews. I feel like every highlight video the team has put out since spring ball has had at least one spectacular catch by Brown. And we haven't mentioned the guy, Dustin, who Holgorsen yesterday singled out as the team's second leading receiver in catches, Peyton Sawyer, a guy who hasn't played a ton but has been in this program for several years and apparently is a big target. The white wide receiver comparisons might seem kind of lazy, Dustin, but I don't know, like the way Holgorsen talked about him in his most recent media availability, I don't know, it kind of sounded like shades of Jake Hurslow, though, you know, I'm ready for you to scold me about how not all Caucasian wide receivers are the same.
Come on, Sam, you can't just automatically compare someone to another. No, that's
I think he's a workout warrior. He has great hands.
I see where you're coming from. No, just in terms of someone who, you know, not a high recruiting pedigree, despite, you know, an email that Sam and I may or may not have gotten in advance of the 2018 season, very mad at us for not talking more Peyton Sawyer.
We're talking Peyton Sawyer now.
I hope if that person is out there, he's pleased that we make sure to mention Peyton Sawyer, who also, according to Holgorsen, was getting some look in the return game, which was, I believe, with the context of that original angry email that we didn't single him out as a returner. Apparently a fantastic kick returner in high school as well, we have been led to believe. So excited to see what he can do. And yeah, it's just a fun story when anytime you see someone who comes in without the high recruiting pedigree, who sticks around for a long time and kind of, you know, eventually works his way into becoming a productive upperclassman. And then speaking of productive upperclassmen, talking about the receivers, you kind of mentioned them up front, but the tight end, Christian Trahan, you know, saw his production tick up a little bit this past season. You know, we've seen the staff since they got here, I think, say a lot of good things about him and how they want to utilize him. So, yeah, I almost felt like even though we did see a little bit more, you know, saw a career high in receiving yards last year, was number two on the team in catches, like you mentioned, I feel like there is still more room for him to grow in the offense.
And this is a guy going into his fourth year as a starter, someone Dana Holgorsen's been very high on. I remember, I believe it was his first spring ball here, Holgorsen, he said Christian Trahan is the best tight end he's ever coached. And that was like 1 year off West Virginia having a third or fourth round drafted tight end. I think Holgorsen's always thought very highly of him, but kind of like you said, yeah, he's your second leading receiver, but he wasn't maybe as consistent a part of the offense as you would think somebody who has shown ability and flashes like he has, just I think to be kind of a good safety valve for Toon. So, you know, I think we've talked about a lot of the wide receivers we're really excited about, but oh man, Dustin, if Christian Trahan has like a 45-50 catch season where he's very reliable bringing in the ball, I know that's not a huge increase in production over a season ago, but you add that to, you know, Tank Dell, what we think is a lot more balanced and a lot more deep receiver group, this is going to be a really hard passing game to stop.
Yeah. On the other hand, I think the one position group that maybe has the most question marks on the Cougar offense heading into next year, however, is going to be that running back group, with Alton McCaskill being likely out for the year with the torn ACL. And, you know, the good news is that you do have an experienced senior running back in Tazon Henry coming back for another year with the Cougs, and certainly someone who looks like he'll become the primary ball carrier with this team, but not a lot of you know, Division I experience beyond Tazon Henry, Sam, and certainly, you know, running back is a position that few coaches in the country, and Dana Holgorsen has not, you know, been one of the exceptions here, few coaches really want to overly rely on one guy to have, you know, 60-80% of your carries the way you might have, you know, 20-30 years ago. Just doesn't seem to really be the way of things. So I think this is definitely a position group where, you know, whether it's Brandon Campbell, the USC transfer, or, you know, someone like Stacey Sneed, Kellen Walker, you know, a junior in the program like Kellen Walker, you know, who is going to get the rest of those carries, I think, remains to be kind of determined. But, you know, that's going to be a position where you're going to have someone, you know, I mean, Taysom Henry's going to be taking on a bigger role than he's had the last couple of years as kind of the number two running back. And you're going to have someone else stepping into that Taysom Henry role. So definitely going to be asking some bigger things of some guys at the running back group.
Yeah, no doubt. Obviously, Taysom Henry isn't going to be asked to carry the ball 40, 50 times a game, but he also has a full season under his belt now in this Holgorsen offense, was the clear number two running back last year behind Alton McCaskill. And I saw a quote from him recently where he talked about one of his biggest goals for the coming season being to improve as a receiver and an all-purpose threat. I already think he's a pretty solid between the tackles running back. You know, having someone who could be a consistent pass catcher out of the backfield, it's not exactly something we've seen in the first 3 years into Holgorsen just yet. And I think it would make a good offense even more fearsome if you could have Henry or Stacy Steen or whoever be a guy you could occasionally go to out of the backfield. I think Brandon Campbell's really intriguing, like Joseph Manjack, who we just mentioned a moment ago, got on the field a little bit, but redshirted for USC last season. And I think I would expect to see Campbell and Stacy Steen, who the staff really seems to be high on, even though he didn't play his first two collegiate seasons. I really expect to see those guys splitting the carries that aren't going to Henry. And I think it's what we, you know, talked about in a recruiting update last week. It's a really exciting position group in the long term. Everyone that we've talked about here besides Henry has multiple years of eligibility left in this program, a couple of real intriguing recruits coming in. But I would agree with you that right now, going to 2021, as you try to figure out life without Alton McCaskill, who was one of the very best freshman offensive players in the country last year, it's not going to make life easier. It certainly is something you're going to have to figure out. And I think it's probably the specific position group with the most question marks. Would agree with you there.
All right. So yeah, I think just kind of, you know, wrapping it up with some final thoughts. I think this is just, like we said, this is the time for the Cougar offense. You know, we've said this a lot, but you know, you hire Dana Holgorsen, you think you're going to get, you know, some good offense. And that's not to say that it's not admirable that Dana Holgorsen has over the last several years kind of evolved as a coach and shouldn't be, you know, solely viewed as you know, the Dana Holgorsen throwing the ball around the seven, you know, throwing the yard 70 times Dana Holgorsen that he used to be. I think he's, you know, an evolved guy, and that, you know, deserves to be, you know, mentioned. But, you know, this is, I don't think anyone is going to deny that we want, you know, that anyone associated with the program is going to deny that there's a lot more room for this offense to get to where everyone wants it to be, you know, given what we've seen. And not only do we have a lot of returners coming back, you have one of the better quarterbacks in the country in Clayton Toon, a ton of options at receiver, you know, an offensive line that looks pretty solid. Man, this is also not a schedule with a ton of good defenses, it doesn't look like. If you look at SP Plus last year. Sam, you want to guess who the best team on Houston's schedule is in terms of their defensive SP Plus ranking last year?
Ooh. I'm going to guess...
Throwing a random curveball at you here.
I think this would be a more obvious answer, which I think is the reason it's not right, but I'm still going to guess it. Is it Tech?
It is not Tech. They are number two at 67. Tulsa.
Oh yeah,
and,
Tulsa.
The number 48 defense in the country according to SP Plus.
Yeah, good enough that got their DC number, hired by TCU, so I guess not too surprising.
Right, there you go. Number 67, Texas Tech. That's your second best defense on the schedule. So yeah, this is a schedule you should score some points against. And as much as we expect Doug Belk to you know, lead this a really good defense again and have that to be, you know, likely if you're going to have to pick one side of the ball, you'd expect to be the strength heading into next year. I still might pick the Cougar defense, but Sam, it feels like this is a year that we should expect to see the Cougars regularly putting up some high point totals.
We're the kind of people who come on here generally and try to keep the expectations realistic. I think we're optimistic, but I think we're realistic. We're not going to say the offense is going to be very good if we don't think there's good evidence that's going to be very good. But yeah, I'm not tamping down the expectations for us at all. You, the listener, I think you should expect great with a capital G things from this offense. If this group stays healthy, Clayton Toon in his fifth season with, I think, you know, minus Alton McCaskill, who we all, I think, wish was playing this year, minus him, I think as good of a supporting cast as any Cougar quarterback has had since, you know, what, Greg Ward's first season under Tom Herman as the starter.
Yeah.
That's the kind of expectations we're talking about here. I think this is going to be a really fun offense. And I think we're going to go from last season where we, you know, okay, saw proof of concept, saw what the staff wants to do. We could see a true, fully realized Cougar offense under Dana Holgorsen. And it's exciting. It's not going to be the Dana Holgorsen offense of, you know, 2008, 2009, which were extremely fun, but threw the ball with reckless abandon. This is going to be a balanced attack. This is going to be the kind of team that plays complementary football. He's been very clear that he is not going back to the air raid days of 12, 13 years ago, but I think still going to be a really exciting, really productive offense when it's all said and done this season.
All right, sounds like a good positive note to end on. So we'll go ahead and leave it there on our way out. Always want to give a huge thank you to our Scott Holman Podcast Patreon supporters. Appreciate the that y'all continue to put money behind the work that Sam and I do here, doing our best to bring you the informed, regular, weekly Cougar content that you love, as we are now excited to be heading into year eight, or solidly into year eight, I should say, heading into the 2022-2023 Cougar Athletics calendar in the coming hours here. So we're looking forward to giving you guys content all year long. If you are going to be someone who is going to be enjoying the Scott Holman Podcast on a regular basis throughout this year, and you feel like you can afford a couple bucks to support Sam and I, we would love for you to go to shpodcast.com/support, where you will find a link to make a recurring monthly donation on Patreon. You can give us a one-time tip on PayPal, or you can buy some merchandise with our street sign logo on it. And of course, you can support the Scott and Holman Podcast by going to homefieldapparel.com and using promo code Holman12 at checkout. Always would love to encourage you to get in contact with us. You can email us shpodcast@gmail.com about Peyton Sawyer or any other Cougar related topic. You can also email us at tweet us at shpodcast. I'm really stumbling here, so we're definitely going to end the podcast. If you made it all the way here, congratulations to you. And as always,
go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
Vamos los Cougs.
Go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
We ain't invited to the party. We had to kick the door in. No cap. No cap. No cap. No cap.